Welcome back to Trial by Wire. My name is Denton, and to wrap up our series on the internet, I have a treat in store for you. We've been talking a lot about how we as users use the internet, but somebody is out there churning out all of those websites and applications. How do they think? For that, I'd like to bring our first ever guest onto the show. Today's episode will be a little longer, so strap in for some good conversation. Our guest today is Annie Eloquin, a web developer from Austin, Texas, and one of my closest friends. Annie graduated from Baylor University with a degree in computer science and honed her skills as a user interface developer, or someone who designs the way websites and mobile apps look. She works for Beeper, a messaging company that combines multiple different chat services like Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp into one application for ease of use. She has also helped develop user interfaces for Matrix, a secure messaging network, and has worked with multiple organizations, including the United Nations. Without further ado, let's get her onto the show. Annie, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I am so excited for this conversation. I think it's going to be fantastic, and I'm hoping that people get a new perspective on what it looks like from the other side of the curtain as you help make some of these cool applications that we get to use, which is very cool. So without further ado, I have decided that one question that I would like to ask all of our guests on this podcast is, what is a piece of technology that has most helped you in your life?
Do I answer that?
Yes, you do.
If it's for everybody?
Yes.
Well, it's not a unique answer, but it is the web browser. So just Google Chrome. And the reason is because it allowed me to play around with coding languages as a kid, just on websites where I was having fun and I wanted to write something called HTML. It inspired me artistically because I got to see other people's art online. And today, it lets me research things for my job. So it has really impacted both creative aspects of my life and professional aspects.
Yeah, as a fellow like developer, I don't know what I would do without the internet for coding. I feel like it's pretty impossible not to code or to code without the internet nowadays.
I guess you pull a book off of your shelf. And you find the answer, maybe.
Yeah, I know some coworkers who have physical books, and I'm like, I'm sure that you can reference those, but I use Google.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get into some questions about web development. So for those who may not know, what is web development?
Yeah, it's the process of creating content that will be shared on the internet. So every time you access a website, let's say google.com, you're requesting some type of information. The page comes up and you see the Google logo with the search bar. A web dev is the one that takes the information and then builds something that will present it to you in a visual and usable way. Anything you visually see in a web browser is part of web development.
So how would you, thinking about, because we talked a little bit about this before, thinking about a website and everything that's going into it, how would you break out what you do from what other non-web developers do?
Okay, there are two sides to it. So you have the data side and then the visual side. And an analogy I've heard is a waiter at a restaurant. So you go to the restaurant and you look at the menu and you're like, oh, I want a chicken soup today. And so you tell the waiter, hey, can you give me a chicken soup? And he says, yes, let me go get that. And so he'll go to the back and he'll get the chicken soup and then he'll bring it to you. The chefs in the back that are actually making it and building that soup, they are the data developers. You can call them backend is a typical term we'll use for that. And then the waiter that brings you out that soup is a front-end developer, which means anything visual that you can see. So I am a front-end developer, and that would be bringing content to you that you can click on and you can enter information into, anything like that.
I love it. Our listeners will be familiar because I actually used a similar analogy in episode one to describe access to the internet as like a restaurant, which I think is a very cool analogy. So I love that you brought that
back. I thought of that while I was saying it. I was like, oh, this is also for APIs.
Yes.
But I'm going to keep going with it.
I love it. No, it's great for client-server architecture. It's a fantastic analogy. So I love that you brought that in. Next question. Why did you, Annie Eloquin, get into web development?
So I did computer science in college. So I'm learning all kinds of coding languages. I'm learning how to do lots of things with computers. But I grew up as an artist. Before I ever coded, I was drawing, and I drew a lot in high school. And so I was always more interested in visual arts than I was in data and how data is structured. So when I found out that front-end development was a thing, which was like 2 years into my computer science degree, I was like, oh, this is so much cooler. I want this. Because it really integrates a designer's brain with a developer's skill set. So that's absolutely why I chose web development, because it's so visual.
I can distinctly remember all of the art throughout all of the doodling in the computer science classes, I'm sure. So
oh, yeah.
I love
the paragraphs. So you draw a little dog like jumping off the paragraphs.
Yep.
And Yep.
Perfect. Vital. I love it. No, and that's so cool that within computer science, there are so many different niches for different people. And so you kind of found your niche in there and have just run with it, which I think is really cool. So this, you kind of already answered this question, but I want to expound on it a little bit more because this came up when I was talking to people about this episode. How did you learn and continue to learn about web development?
Yeah, it started in college, but honestly, I mean, you were there. Our program did not focus that much on front-end development.
Yep.
And so once there was even just an inkling of, oh, we're supposed to build in this language for this project, can I do that all the time, like for my job? And I found out I could. I utilized the skills I had in college, but did a lot of personal projects. And that's honestly how I still continue to learn today, is I will say I have a project or I have a problem that I want to solve. And I'll say, okay, what tools can I use to solve this problem? And sometimes I'll do that intentionally. So if I'm writing a new project and it's just for fun, I'll say, hey, what are the new tools out there that I don't currently know that I could integrate into this in order for me to learn them better?
Yeah. So, for example, when you were making the apps for Nathan's board game, Interstellar Fight Club, that you all were putting together, those were web apps and those were you kind of flexing your skills and learning more as you were doing stuff like that?
Yeah, there was a particular type of structure that I was specifically trying to learn while I was building that. So I had worked with it previously under the mentorship of somebody, but this was my time to be like, okay, can I take what I learned and actually implement that myself? And I did.
Congratulations. Yeah, computer science is a really interesting field because you're always having to learn more. And it's like the stuff that you learn in college just goes defunct in 5 years. And so, better keep up with what's going on. And so it's kind of that balance between, okay, I learned this stuff in college, but now I'm always, always still learning. What resources would you say are what you use? Because there's tons out there.
In terms of just learning about new things, there are a few blogs. So the Changelog blog, I have that come to my inbox. In terms of products, oftentimes Product Hunt has a lot of good things because it'll show things for both designers and developers and just regular users of computers. And so it's kind of just a mix of everything, which I like. And other than that, I kind of just read the documentation for something. So I might know of a tool already, and the tool will tell me how to use it.
And that's very interesting because you didn't list a single, I guess, authoritative computer science source of here is where all the knowledge is flowing from. It seems very decentralized. You're getting it from a lot of different sources.
Yeah, I would say that's right.
So I think that's very interesting. So I'm glad you brought that up. Next question, what is the hardest thing about making a website?
I would say it's accessibility. And I use that term to mean several different things.
Okay.
Because accessibility can mean accessible for those, for example, that use a screen reader. So you have to implement things in a special way so that blind people can literally use your website with a screen reader.
Yep.
Colors need to be a particular contrast so that people can read it correctly. But beyond that, that's a small aspect of it. You have to be thinking about that. I actually mean accessibility more in the sense of there will be thousands of other people using this website, and you have to think outside of your own perspective on how you would use this website.
Yeah.
Because I might say, oh, and part of this is a design problem, like design can handle a lot of this, but I might say, oh, I think this button should be right here. But then maybe 80% of the other people who use this website get confused and they're like, I can't find the button to go do this thing. So that's difficult because you don't know how all these other thousands of people who use your website. But it's also accessibility in terms of devices. So let's take iOS, for example. If I make an iOS app that you can download onto your iPhone, I know that at minimum, despite versions of iOS and versions of the iPhone, it'll always be an iPhone that my app is running on. And there's a level of certainty with that. With websites, I don't know what the browser will be. It could be an Android device with a mobile browser from 2004. It could be Microsoft Edge from 2020. Like, it could be Firefox or Google Chrome or an iPhone or a tablet. It's all these different sizes of screen, year that it came from, device it could be on, operating system. All of these aspects, they don't seem like they would cause issues, but there's a lot of tiny little things that can break on all of these different things. It has honestly improved over the past years. Google in particular is trying to centralize the data around, hey, what do we expect a browser to be able to do? So this was particularly difficult in past years, but we're gradually getting to a better place with this. But it can still throw you off if you're like, oh, this issue is only happening for this one person in this one scenario. Great.
Yeah, I remember when I was working a web development internship, one of the guys in charge said, yeah, we have a report that somebody is using our website on an Xbox browser. And I said, what?
What? The places you can access the internet.
Amazing.
Amazing. And
so when you're thinking about this, so your end users are varied and sundry different people. How do you figure out how to satisfy all of them who are using your website? How do you get feedback? How do you understand what they want?
To some extent, you can kind of just say, too bad. That's not ideal, but for an Xbox browser,
yeah,
it's like, how important is that?
Yeah.
No, that's not ideal if you have to do that. But often, if you are a product, it comes down to communication with your users. Because how are you going to know what your users want otherwise? So you have a good team that people can reach out to. They can send an email, they can chat in some other way, and you listen to that feedback. You're like, okay, we need to take this seriously.
That makes sense. Yeah, that tracks with what I've seen. So good answer. What are some common mistakes, speaking of usability, that web developers make that make websites hard to use? I know you're very passionate about this topic.
The first thing that came to mind was no mobile version.
Ah.
Because people access websites constantly from phones these days. So it's fine, but it's not great. And if you're dealing with somebody that does not have as much experience with technology, that can confuse them. They're like, I can't read this. I don't know where to zoom in. In addition to that, just bad design practices. Like, I don't know where to find this menu. No, like, indication on what's happening. If you don't know a page is loading, for example, you might not know to just wait instead of clicking on a bunch of other stuff. And then bad performance. I think it's just with the way web development is currently, I think it's really easy to do bad habits in the coding that make the performance really bad. And I can't really like get into the nitty gritty yeah. of why that is, but it's just a risk that you can take if you're being lazy in your code.
Fair enough. Well, and like you say, or like we talked about before, with this decentralization of knowledge, it's like some web developers may not know that this thing is not super performant. And so you throw it in there, especially if they're junior developers and don't have that experience. Yeah. And so a lot of your websites may run more slowly than they should because the people who are mm-hmm. making them may not be aware of what all they need to do to fix that.
Yeah, just like any other area of computer science, the more years you are in web development, at least to me, it feels like you gather all these snippets of wisdom that's like, oh yeah, when I do this to the database, then I have to like turn this knob 3 times to make sure that it doesn't crash. And like, it's all these things that are not intuitive, but you need to know.
That's why I love getting advice by senior developers at work, because they have all of this years of knowledge and wisdom that they can bestow upon you. And then suddenly your code works and you finally understand why. It's great. I agree 100%. So this question actually came from my grandparents when I was talking to them about the podcast. For those who didn't grow up with the internet and aren't necessarily plugged into the internet, maybe they are just now getting cell phones smartphones. And are now getting internet in their homes and are starting to interact with the web of things and all this kind of stuff, how could the internet most benefit them?
Off the bat, I think of knowledge.
Okay.
So I, just an anecdote, I in my life of many hobbies that I possess,
yep.
I want to be learning how to do new things. So let's take sewing, for example. I am not good at sewing, but if my sewing machine decides to just spit out yards of thread and not do what I want it to do, I have the ability to go on the internet and ask my question and say, why is this happening to me? Tell me how to sew properly. Tell me how to sew denim, like on different types. I can use different types of fabric and stuff. And so there are people in my life that sew. So maybe some people would say, well, you don't need the internet for something like sewing because you can ask people, you know where to go. But if you take one of my hobbies that's more niche, like 3D printing, I don't know anybody that 3D prints. And so if I wanted to get into that, I would have to teach myself entirely. But because I have the internet, it allowed me to get into this new hobby that I absolutely love. And I can just learn from everybody else in the world, even though I don't have anybody nearby. That and knowledge applies to every aspect of something like that. If you want to learn deeply about baseball and you don't know anybody that plays baseball, you find it on the internet.
Yeah, and that's not just information, because you can find other people who are learning about that as well. That's why sites like Reddit have really soared in popularity. You can find people who mm-hmm. enjoy your common interests, even if none of your friends and family do. At least someone on the internet does.
Yep. That's the same with me with language learning right now. I'm learning Japanese, and I have exactly one friend I interact with regularly learning Japanese, which even that is unlikely. That is statistically improbable.
Yep.
And I can find other people and chat with them online in Japanese to like brush up on my practice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. That's a great answer. Because people may be able to find people in their lives, maybe, but the internet just opens up those opportunities. So I like that a lot. Last question in regard to web development for you. How do you find value in the work that you do?
So I deeply care about communication. Significantly.
I've noticed.
I really want the world to be able to chat freely amongst themselves, not having to depend on a single company for that. So this question was pretty easy for me to answer because that's literally my job.
Uh-huh.
I work on a chat app, and that is the value that I find in my current work, is that I'm like, I'm building an app that will improve people's experience of communicating with each other. We do so much in chat every day that I'm like, I want that to be the best experience possible. Beyond that, I think I really value creating things that people will find valuable. So I find value when other people find it valuable. Like you were talking about the app that I made for my husband's game. I enjoyed making it because I immediately saw him turn around and have fun with it. And so I really like that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's really great. I will poke at this because you and I are both Christians, and I'm curious from an ethical perspective where that value is almost sourced from in terms of making other people happy, sure, but also this desire to have the world be able to chat freely. Are you finding any sourcing for your faith in that?
A little bit, actually. It's interesting you bring this up. I am pretty confident that whatever next full-time role I will have, it will be directly beneficial for the kingdom. Just the company that I would work for would be working towards that. And I know that there is a project that I may be consulting on soon that is related to missionaries being able to chat with professionals that can help them with their tasks. Maybe a plug, this is like for Switchboard.
Switchboard!
Which was really cool. But in that same vein, it's like these missionaries need that ability to be able to communicate. And so I care about communication just on a global level, just for the sake of these memories and communication that's happening. But ultimately, I really do want to be able to use my skills, not even just for communication, but just for that furthering of the kingdom. How can I help missionaries? How can I, like, can I build you something that would help you, even if it's not something I'm super excited about?
Nice.
So.
For those that are unaware, and I'll drop a link to the show notes about this, Switchboard is an application that allows missionaries out in the field to communicate with people who may just have an hour or two, who are skilled in different areas, to be able to have conversations and help each other. It's a great support tool for missionaries. I have volunteered with it once or twice, and it's been really great. So I'll drop a link to that. It's a very awesome platform, and I'm very excited that you'll be helping out with that because I think that's very cool.
Yeah.
So last question for you. You are a professional and doing lots of cool things. How can people keep up with your work? And do you have anything you'd like to promote?
Sure. Well, I mean, I would definitely promote Switchboard if anybody
wants
to pick up Switchboard. They can always have more Kingdom consultants.
Love it.
I don't have any personal blog or anything, but I will have Denton leave my email in the description if anybody wants to reach out, because I love hearing from people, answering questions, getting coffee. And then also, I'm really excited about Beeper, which is the app that I work for. So you should absolutely go check it out, because I think it's the coolest, and I'm definitely not biased. It's at beeper.com.
It's Beeper's pretty cool. I've been using Beeper for a while, and I enjoy it. So I think it's very cool, and I'm glad you're talking about it. Well, that is all that I have for today. Annie, thank you so, so much for your time and for helping our listeners learn a little bit more about the other side of web development.
Absolutely. This was fun.
I hope it was helpful to hear from the person on the other side of the screen. Creating websites that are easy to use and beneficial to others is no easy task, but developers like Annie work daily to make it happen. Your homework for today is to think about the websites you use on a regular basis. What would you change about them to make them easier to use? What kind of features would you add? Think about that, and I'll see you next time. Hey, thanks for listening. Subscribe for more if you like what you heard. If you're on YouTube, give us a like and a comment, or rate and review us on your favorite podcast feed. It helps out a lot. If you want to talk to us, you can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or on Instagram at Trial by Wire Show, or on Facebook at facebook.com/trialbywirepodcast. You can also send me an email at trialbywireshow@gmail.com. See you soon.